What's going on, Josh Nagle?
Ken, how are you?
Doing good, buddy. I'm your host, Kenny B, here with ESPN Sports, coming to you live just outside the Club County of Racing Sportsbook on a very hot Friday.
For sure.
I mean, that's crazy what's going on out there with this heat wave.
Well, we finally caught up to us, Ken, for a while there. It's been a bit of a milder summer, right? We haven't got the triple figures just yet, but here we are mid-July, and it's catching up to us.
Look at all my notes here. I am.
Yeah,
so,
you're ready to go.
I'm so unorganized right now. So unorganized. So, John the Hawk Stevens is going to be with us here after the first break. He's got adult responsibilities, job. You know, John.
Yeah, that happens.
John has a job, so anyways, he'll be here shortly after. Josh, I guess we've been talking about poker a little bit the last couple of shows because of the main event of the World Series, the $10,000 No Limit main event took place, and it ended Tuesday night.
That's right.
And Hossein Ehsan. Yeah. You know, he ends up winning the $10 million first prize, and it was pretty entertaining. You know, I tell you what, I took out of it, Josh. I play a ton of poker, and he played pretty straightforward, no moves.
Yeah.
Not a lot of moves, a lot of check calling and letting his opponents bet hands, and he just called them down. And, I mean, he just a pretty vanilla approach to poker, and it worked.
At this day and age, though, that's the contrarian, you know, approach, right? That, to me, it goes to prove, Ken, one thing. I loved it, too. Guy in his 50s taking it down. He's actually very accomplished. When they started talking about him, I wasn't sure at first. Why do I recognize this guy? Then they started talking about some of his poker stars finishes. Like, oh, no wonder. EPTs, that's right. London. I remember a few years ago, he came on the scene, and at the time, he was unknown to all the GTO bots stuff. They're like, what's this old guy doing? He was making all these final tables. But what's funny is he would blow up. He had some big chip leads, and he would just go wild and make some bad plays. But he's always finished third. I think he got as high as second. So, like, no, this guy's actually been doing good the past few years. He's capable. And you're right. Here's what's funny. And the same thing with the other guy. It's why the heads up took so long. It's like he had this very ABC, you know, approach to the game, as you alluded to. But you know what's funny? After a while, if you're consistent with it, that's hard to beat. Because you're like, the reason it was a real boring heads up, I will say, because it was so ABC. Yeah. It's like, yes, you got something. You bet. You didn't. You folded. It's because both guys were such immense calling stations that they were very scared to bluff each other because you knew it wouldn't work. I mean, Ehsan wouldn't let go of, I put it this way, he didn't call with everything, but like on the end there, it was sad. The guy that finished fourth, Gary Gates, was a pretty good player. He made the fatal mistake of trying to bluff Ehsan huge. Remember the time where he tried to bluff him off top pair in the river with a big raise, and Ehsan just tossed the chip in. And yeah, he just, you know, has got the old man coffee, you know, style there where he doesn't like to fold. But
not as exciting as the Farhall Moneymaker match.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Because there was some big bluffs.
Oh, you know, exactly.
Moneymaker's big move.
Like I said, this was so ABC, like you could tell what's going to happen. You get a piece of the flop, bet, you don't check, and it was pretty predictable. But nonetheless, for a guy with that big of a lead, what he didn't do was spew it away. He didn't do anything crazy. He kind of let the game come to him. Well, his general disposition was all right. The only thing I didn't like about Ehsan, again, I'm glad he won, but I thought it was funny when he got heads up. And a couple times he got sucked out on where he had like top pair and middle pair, ended up making trips on the end, and his opponent won. A couple times he turned his cards over. He was upset. He lost with top pair, and he slams his cards down. I'm like, okay, there's something you got to have some perspective here. For a guy who basically hasn't lost a hand in 10 straight days, I don't think you can be whining about your luck when you lose a couple. But nonetheless, he outplayed him. You saw the finish. I didn't go, you know, went to 5 a.m., so I finally turned off the TV, and I saw all the highlights, though. And the final hand, I was like, yeah, it's not surprising. It was actually a rough board with an overpair. But there was, well, first of all, it's clear he had made up his mind he was going to call if the guy shoved. That's not necessarily an instant call, but it is for him. It turns out he was ahead, and the guy, for me, if you're going to do anything with a flush draw like that, you might as well do it on the flop. But he was getting called no matter what he did, so I don't know what else, you know, what choice the other guy had other than when he didn't make his draw on the flop, you could check fold, but pretty strong. They picked up a gut shot on the turn, so. But I was glad with how it turned out. Like I said, hey, of all the GTO bots, everyone claiming nobody over 30 was ever going to win it again, I actually say score one for the 55-year-old guy. I'm glad.
Absolutely.
And you and I talked a little bit before the show, too. I'm not a huge fan of the Italian kid who finished second, so.
San Martino.
Yeah. The guy who finished third was my favorite player. And I
Alex
was pretty,
Livingston.
Yeah, Livingston was fantastic. And I was bummed. He just got unlucky in a pot with San Martino. He was the most skilled at the final table.
You know, I kind of was anticipating a collapse because Ehsan, he had all the chips. And he let San Martino, he took the lead heads up at one time.
Right.
So, but then he was able to, you know, he kept his composure, kept whittling, stayed with his game plan, and ended up winning the whole thing. So, exciting stuff, you know. And here we are. Got to wait a whole another year for the main event.
Yeah, exactly. And you know why I like the third place guy the most? Like, not only was he skilled and extremely poised, but you know what thing he did, Ken, when I saw one of my favorite moves was with two tables left? And it's kind of interesting how you know, the guys play, right, when there's the final table on the line, and you wonder, will they just, you know, you curl up and just get so tight that they can't even play, or will they be willing to put their lives at stake? Well, he played a hand with the guy Skirbek, who finished ninth, who I also liked. He wasn't scared. Milo Skirbek, who finished ninth place. Alex Livingston played a huge hand with him, and Livingston was relatively short-stacked. Skirbek had been the huge chip leader at his table, and you could tell it was his goal to just run everyone over. He was three-betting and four-betting everybody like a maniac. He had, like, I think, a close to $100 million at one time. It didn't work out for him, Ken, because he got caught enough that he ended up losing some huge pots, and he just limped to the final table with $20 million and then was the first one out. But I liked how he was going for it. He was going to try to be the accumulator and dominate the final table. Well, Livingston got in a hand with him where Livingston got top pair on a queen high board. It was king-queen that he had. And I want to say it was something like, you know, queen 3-5 with two diamonds. And the other guy had king 4 of diamonds, which so just a flush draw. But he puts them all in, Skirbek does, and you could tell Livingston was thinking about, you know, does he just knit it up here and fold? And it was clear that, you know, his stack was even such that he might, if he wanted to, could really tighten up and maybe even squeak into the final table. But then you could see him figure it out. It's like, you know what, this hand's probably not in jeopardy and probably being pushed around here, and you got to get chips. You can't be scared. So he called it off, and the guy's hand was so bad that it wasn't even the nut flush draw, so not even, obviously, a king wouldn't even help him because Livingston had king, queen. So it runs out. You know, you can tell he was a little nervous. The guy picked up a gut shot on the turn, and on the river it was a three-yard diamond where his outs. And Livingston said that out loud. It was a three-yard diamond. It looked like he was content to live with it either way. He survives it, you know, doubles his stack, and then he was a factor. But I just like it when a guy's, you know what they say, you know, you got to be, you're willing to die to live on in that situation. I like that he just, you know, found the nerve to make the right play. You and know, he was great. He's a great mentality, great, you know, even keel.
Well, they're all, you know, we, anybody can win the thing. I mean, you have
Livingston
to get
was
lucky.
Also 12th just like 2 years ago, yeah. Too. Yeah.
You know, what I found interesting, Josh, and if you listen to the show all the time, you know, we had a guy from Ninja Poker come on here. His name was Chris Wallace. And in about day three, he was at the feature table, and all they kept showing him. And he was the guy that came on from Ninja Poker. He owns the Ninja Poker
Correct.
Tour. So his name is Chris Wallace, and he won the big tournament a while back. But with that being said, he ended up finishing 225th, and he cashed out $50,000. And they've already scheduled a Ninja Poker tournament back in the Reno area, and Chris has already asked if he can come back on the show. So it's going to be neat to be able to talk to Chris about, you know, his another experience, another deep run. You know, 8,569 players, and he finished 255th for $50,000 cash.
Right. Ken, I think that's crazy, too. Again, the main event being so top-heavy, and that's just the nature of the thing. But how crazy is it, too? And I'm not saying that's bad money at all, but you realize you paid $10,000 to get in, so you basically got 5-1 on your money. To play like 5.5, 6 days, outlast 96% of the field, and make 5-1.
Yeah.
And then just, yeah, so obviously the final tables. But, yeah, that's just so huge, Ken. I can't believe we talked a little bit about this, you know, the last couple of shows, and none of us have ever played the main event. I'd like to. But to me, I'd be one of those guys would be like my dream. I'd probably be sitting there, if it so happened, with like, you know, the tiny, with like four chips or like get on the bubble. To me, I'd feel like, I'd be the type who felt like I wanted if I just squeezed into the money. I can't imagine these guys that go 6-7 days. It's, to me, the in-between thing's got to be rough. If you're like, you know, 100 to 300th, where like you didn't really sniff the final table, but you outlasted 8,000 people. I mean, it's tough to make it that far and not be able to go a little further.
This is what I don't like about the tournament right now, Josh. It goes back to exactly what you said. I'm looking at the 1,286 finishers. They all won $15,000.
Right, that's the mint cash.
Why are we paying down so low? Take those if you make pay the top 200 players, top 300 players, and really pay them.
No,
I mean,
I agree.
Like you said, Josh, if I played for the first time and I entered $10,000, you know, paid my $10,000, finished and got back $15,000, I'd be a little upset. I mean, I really,
totally.
Even though
played 4.5 days, 12 hours a day to get barely your money back.
Yeah. So why not? So why not really make this a lot more top and loaded? Maybe the top 200. I mean, now we're talking about some serious money.
Well, maybe so, but you know, they do usually play the top 10%, so that would be pretty crazy, like 8,000 whatever, and you don't even pay,
well,
you know,
they're
only
not
the top.
Well, there was only, that's not.
But
Okay,
but all I'm saying is it's in response to customer demand, and here's what I find bizarre.
Okay, pay the top 10%.
Right.
That's only 800.
That's less than 1,200. Right, I agree with you. Yeah, it's less than 1,200. But what I'm saying is that was a reaction to customer, I don't say complaints, but feedback. Oh, WSOP, how do you guys like what we're doing here? And I think it's crazy because it wasn't long ago, I remember we talked about this, but a few years back where a min cash was at least double. A min cash got you 20. I
should
totally
be.
Agree.
Should
a min cash should be at least 20. But then they got complaints coming from people. Oh, I played 4.5 days and walked away with nothing. That the WSOP opened up the pay structure and started letting these min cashers, like you said, are barely above the buy-in. And I'm with you. I say pay the top 10, but at least go back to the double your money for getting it in there at least.
I'm actually pulling. I have it right here, and I'm pulling it up to find out where you had to double your money. To double
how high you had to go? Yeah.
How high you had to go? Let's look at this here. I'm almost there. $20,000, right there. $20,200. You finished 668th. So, but that goes. But Josh, that's the first finisher that won 667th. You win $20,200 from that spot all the way down to 785. So, I mean, you could really upload this thing. I mean, you got 500 people that made 18,000 between 18 and 15 that you could just top load everything. Pay 10% and be done with it. If you don't finish in the top 10% in an event, you shouldn't win.
I agree.
You shouldn't get any cash.
I agree. Whether it takes 7 days or 3 hours to get there, that's how it should be. I agree.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I don't understand. You know, it's many knits. Too many knits.
Totally. Just like you said, basically you could, especially with the big chip stack they give you now, you could knit it up, do next to nothing. I mean, seriously, if you played nothing but aces and kings, I mean, you could sit there and probably toe the line of making the money, just getting grinded down.
Absolutely. And then it would really mean something if you cashed in the main. It would mean a lot more.
And you know how the chip stacks keep going up? Me and Tommy Thompson talked about this a few weeks ago when you were at the Wing Fest. And I said, I'm not sure, but you know, it wasn't that long ago that the main event, your $10,000 buy-in equated to $10,000 in chips, a 1,500 blinds. I said it was like a turbo. It wasn't a lot. 100 blinds to work with. Now deep stacks are all the rage, and they keep adjusting it. Last year, it was 50,000 in chips with the blind start 75-150, Ken. So that's like 330 big blinds. This year, they upped it but skipped a level. So 60,000 in chips with the 1 and 200 blinds. So everyone got exactly 300 big blinds. It's hard to blow through that quickly. I mean, you'd have to either get supremely unlucky or just sort of punt it off in order. So that's enough, 300 big blinds to last you a few days. And so it makes me wonder, is that, you know, even that, should they, I'm not saying that if I played, I would want a smaller stack, but that's why it takes so long to get to the money. You got to weed through. I mean,
you're playing. Like you said,
two-hour levels.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm okay with that. But I agree. I mean, if you finish in the top 10%, you should get rewarded. If you're not good enough to finish in the top 10,
yeah.
Get better or get luckier, one of the two. I don't know. I mean,
I agree. And you know, some of these guys just barely made it. You remember when Joseph Hashem won? Because I always remember too. He was almost the bubble boy and close. They were just reaching the money, and I guess he had been running bad or whatever. And they were like three or four away from it. So ESPN's going, oh, bubble, who's going to make it? Whatever. Look at the outer table. You could see him. He's wearing a white T-shirt. No one knew who he was. That was when they edited the stuff and played it 6 months later. You know, the poker technology was way behind where it is now. But they showed Hatcher. He got his money in bad. I forget what it was, like, you know, ace, 10 to ace king or something more. He was in really bad shape, short stack. He's literally walking away down the hall just thinking, I'm done. He didn't even want to see it. He ends up sucking out. They called him back, like, no, get back. You actually won the hand. He said, oh, cool. He comes back and maybe I'll make the money. It's just sort of funny seeing that. We're like, the guy thought he was going to, you know, bubble out or whatever, and he's your eventual winner. It just goes to show, you know, every main event champion's journey has something like that where – very rarely do they, you know, coast from wire to wire.
You know, a couple of three events, you know, that stand out to me, and I don't remember. You've heard of probably the one guy they banned for life, or they theoretically initially banned for life because he won a pot, and when he reached out to scoop the pot, he inadvertently, he says,
yeah.
WSOP
he took the chips of the guy next to him who wasn't there.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? That was crazy, though. I read even more about that. It turns out, actually, the guy's fairly well-reputed. They say he's from Vegas, plays cash games. He has a pretty decent reputation. But from what I heard, though, he just showed up drunk as a skunk that day. Yeah.
He said he played a long cash game.
Yes.
Everyone
smelled the booze on him, though. And he said, he claimed he was just goofing around and he was going to put the chips back. But bottom line is you just don't do that. So he was out, and yeah, there's some weird stuff going on there. The guy BA'd the whole table, and
yeah, well,
also got kicked out
of the. Well, he went to this other guy gets in a tank. He makes a large bet. His opponent, their heads up. The opponent has pocket fives, and he goes in the tank for quite a bit. Well, apparently it upset this one guy. So he gets up and he throws his shoe at the dealer,
yeah,
and hits the dealer with his shoe.
And then he also showed his cards.
Then he pulls his pants down and BA, like you say, shows his junk, so yeah, to speak. And then, so they kick him out. The guy ends up calling with the pocket fives.
Yeah.
So he gets kicked out. And then he goes to the Aria and jumps on a craps table and
thing.
Did the same thing. This guy had some really bad drugs.
Yeah, no doubt. And the worst part for me is that, like I said, the pocket five guys called and he actually lost. And even though they kicked out the guy who had nothing, he had queen three, the pocket five guy was still, you know, it's like, all right, your opponent did all this and we DQ'd him. And to me, it'd be like, you know, if you got hit with a low blow in a boxing match and they DQ'd the other guy but still didn't give you the win.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are the pocket five guys. Still lost the pot and they didn't give him the money back. Even though, no, we just kicked out your opponent, yeah, for what he did. And you and I talked a little bit before the show. I told you part of the reason I didn't like San Martino at all. Like,
that was the first story I was going to.
Oh, okay. You don't mind if I say it?
No, go for it.
Yeah, you know, I thought, not to mention, one, I don't really like one, his rail was just unruly, and I realized they.
Did you like the way I found it more distracting?
Oh, it was horrible. I could hardly watch it because of that. And I thought Ensign had some great composure because, man, the way they were screaming, I'd be like, you know what? We got a card game for the world championship. Could they at least tame them down a little bit? They were just off the rails, and I thought it was way too overboard. But nonetheless, and I didn't like San Martino too much. Like I told you, I felt like. I didn't think he played that great, but I think it brought up the big issue I had with him is ethically, where, again, I talked about how my most exciting time, I love watching it when it's down to two tables and just seeing how people react to the pressure, because nothing gets through. You realize that, Ken. There's no raising. I mean, every pot's contested. It's usually three or four bet, and it's just total pressure cooker. But there's a play. It's pretty straightforward because this table is like five or six-handed, and San Martino wakes up with the pocket tens and his opponent short stack. Has pocket queens, so this was very straightforward. The queen shove, and he, five-handed, of course. I mean, nine-handed, you're probably not going to get rid of that pair, big pair against another pair. But he asked the dealer for a count, and at first she's just sifted through the chips. She goes, oh, it looks like $17 million. At which point another player, just a player sitting there, sees the discrepancy and goes, yeah, you know what, that looks like more to me. You know, they had the $5 million chips. I guess she just didn't see one. And the other player says, you know, that looks like more. I think it's more like 22. And the dealer says, hold on a second. She counts the stack. She goes, no, you are correct. I'm sorry. It's 22. She looks at San Martino, still shaking his head. 22, you got it? He's like, yep, no problem. I call. They flip the hands. He realizes he's a huge dog. And then he freaks out, saying, oh, how she made a huge mistake and he was misled. And she said 17 and he only called. All of which was BS. He clearly was given full instructions, full information. So much so, he starts flipping out to where they call over Jack Effel, who I'm not a huge fan of him. He's very abrasive.
Well, he took some abuse on Twitter for this.
But you know what? It's kind of funny, and I'm rarely in his corner because the guy is, believe me, Ken, I admit, the guy is an abrasive jerk. I think it's weird because he used to not be that way a while ago. But I just think he's taken so much heat over the years. I think he's just sort of gotten to where his patience is lower than it used to be. Because at first they just solved it, and even the intermediate managers were like, no, this is going to stand. He insisted on Effel being called over, and Effel, yeah, he wanted none of it. He kind of heard the short version of what happened. He's like, you called, and it's done.
Well,
and later on, they ended up saying that Effel apologized. I don't even think that he needed to.
Yeah. Let's go after our first commercial break because I'll tell you what the rule is on that,
yeah,
when we get back. So, William Hill Sports Show, John the Hawk Stevens is going to mic up, and he'll be with us on the next segment. This is William Hill Sports Show, ESPN 94.5 FM. We're back here at the Club Caniva here with John the Hawk Stevens. Got mic'd up for the break as anticipated. Curry Lynch was going to be on today, but he actually had some other stuff with his family he had to take care of. But he's excited. We're going to get Curry Lynch. I was excited when I was talking to him. He goes, oh, man, I'd love to do that. So he's he's working with the police department now. We were doing some stuff with him, and we got to a long just talk and stuff. And so,
yeah, I will be in Yerington next week, so you can take my place.
I did see that. Yeah. So you're going to Night in the Country?
I will be at Night in the Country.
So, good luck.
Making interesting decisions.
Yes, it's questionable decisions.
Questionable decisions at best.
Yes, at best.
I'm so. Not, I can't be held responsible.
No.
Questionable at best, listening. What's the ceiling for worse?
You'd be surprised.
So, maybe I wouldn't, but what are you going to?
Well, I'm not going to announce it
right.
Over
I'm just
the
saying,
air,
maybe
Josh.
Maybe a commercial
people
break.
People listening.
All yeah. right. Funny.
Yeah, exactly. So he'll be making some poor decisions.
Yeah, hopefully.
Along with all of his crew that's going to be there making poor decisions.
But as the king of that crew, the crown belongs on my head. So those
you're the king of the crew?
Those decisions negatively impact me no matter what decisions they make. So even if I don't make any bad decisions,
are you the self-appointed king of the crew?
No, no, no. That's I was anointed.
Anointed? Who anointed you?
Billy Snow.
Get out of here.
No, I don't know. Who knows? Dude?
Billy Snow's birthday's tomorrow. They're having a big block party.
Yesterday.
Well, oh, yeah, they're having a big block party tomorrow. Yeah. Anyways. Josh, going back
yeah,
to...
Right. So you're going to tell me your input on San Martino hand.
Yeah, well, going
Queens
back...
Queens against tens.
I actually read the rule in the TDA, the Tournament Directors Association rule. And it basically states, to put it in a nutshell, is that it's the calling player's responsibility to know what he's calling. It makes no difference what the dealer says. It makes no difference what the player that made the wager says. And it makes no difference what a third-party player at the table said. He says, it is your responsibility when you say call to know what you're calling. No, you have nobody to blame but yourself. And it goes back to what you're saying. He's a professional player. Dario Sammartino is a professional player. He knows that rule, Josh.
Totally.
He knows that rule.
That's why I didn't really like it. It was a clear angle shoot, 100%, Ken. And what's funny is, believe me, he took some heat on you mentioned Twitter, YouTube, everywhere else. And I agree with all the critics where it's like, that was purely situational, whereas if he had flipped over, you know, his pocket tens and the other person had eights, he wouldn't have cared. He only suddenly didn't like it because he was losing. But and I know what you're saying, because Effel even explained that to him. He's like, it didn't even matter if it was the other way around. He's like, if you somehow accidentally stuck out 30 million and the other guy only had three, that's what you'd be calling. He's like, this is the same in reverse. So exactly what you said. Effel explained it to him plain as day. But regardless of all that, there was no confusion, so to speak, because like I said, even though the other player was the one who corrected the stack, the dealer even said, couldn't have been plain as day, explained to you, yes, my bad, I said 17 first, it's now 22. Yeah. Are you aware? He nods and said yes, and I'm still calling. And then the cards are flipped up, and oops, I'm losing. Tens to queens. Yep. Wait a second, I got screwed.
Absolutely.
And I was like, what a baby. And such an angle shoot. I mean, I seriously wish he would have busted short of the final table. I mean, that's purely cheating, is what it is.
No, and it's not like the dealer's incompetent.
She won dealer of the year. That was Heather. Yeah, the one who won dealer of the year.
And so good it's for her.
And that's not even really a mistake, because a mistake would have been not telling him before it got called.
It makes no difference,
right? But she corrected it before the decision was made.
When you play on that stage, there's no situation that can come up that they don't have a rule for. And when you're playing for $10 million. Yeah. Better know the rules.
Yeah, but what a weasel. So I hope he enjoyed that run, and I hope he never gets that far again.
Did you see after that he dressed up in tuxedos and all?
To actually dress nicely for the final table is not something I'm opposed to.
But I agree with that.
The other guy, believe me, I was bummed out. Alex Livingston, who I just thought had the most charisma and the most true class and skill, and I hated that in the biggest key pot. He actually lost to San Martino. I thought if Livingston got heads up, he was winning.
Yeah. All right. Anyways, we
a fun main event, though, right, Ken? You said you enjoyed
it. I enjoyed it. John, Chris Wallace, we were talking about, the guy that was here from Ninja Poker.
Yeah.
He was the at the final, or not the final table, the feature table, like in day three or something.
Yeah.
And he had a bunch of chips. He ended up finishing 225th, went cash 50,000. So that was the guy that we had on the show.
And I remember.
He's going to be back a little bit later this year.
I was going to ask you that. I saw that they were coming back to town.
Yeah, they've already contacted me and said, hey, can we come on and do a segment? And I said, absolutely.
Nice. Yeah, they were fun.
It was. So he looked like he knew what he was doing. The announcers knew who he was.
That's good.
So anyways, that was pretty exciting.
A little credibility.
Yeah, a little credibility to the poker show, because me and Josh think we know what we're doing.
Yeah.
Obviously we don't. Did you watch any of it?
I watched a lot of it. I didn't see the final.
Because it went till 5 in the morning
exactly.
Or whatever
so
it was.
I stayed with it as long as I could, but yeah, I didn't see the finale.
Yeah, crazy stuff. So on to next year.
Yep.
What else is going on this year, guys? Where do I want to go? I know we got some UFC, we got some boxing, we got some baseball.
The San Francisco Giants can't lose.
We got the Giants. I got that keyed up right now, and we talked about that. Let's Tyreek Hill. I got to ask you guys' opinion on this.
Sure.
You know, everybody's talking about, you know, they thought he was going to be suspended 7, 8, 10 games for the year for these child abuse allegations, and it comes back today that the NFL's decided not to suspend him at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's in a league that is so image conscious, it is really surprising that there's not some sort of suspension. You know, obviously they looked into it and they're satisfied with their findings, but I was really surprised.
No, I agree, especially when you go back to the situation with Ray Rice and everyone else. Of course, you know, he was actually caught on tape, but there's been some other situations where people either got in fights or if it came to this, where it's like, yeah, even if the court of law let, or Ezekiel Elliott, you know, even if the court of law let him off the hook, but that the image that it projected, it was bad news, and they got suspended anyway. And, John, of course, the big example for me comes to mind is Roethlisberger, meaning, he whatever he did or didn't do, the law, you know, the cases were dropped, but it looked bad enough where he took four games, right?
Sure, sure.
So this is the thing with
originally
that.
Six.
Right, that's right, appealed down. But the thing with Tyreek Hill is not, okay, they don't have a videotape, but they have a pretty damning audio tape, and it's terrible, where he basically doesn't deny beating the kid and says to the, you know, wife that, yeah, she better be scared too. It's pretty horrible
that's
evidence.
Four games right there.
I think so. Especially when you see the way the NFL had been, like, trying to clear it up and go in this direction of wanting more accountability and more consequences for inappropriate behavior. I look at it this way, like, I mean, I was surprised. So, okay, they're working it out through the quarter law, and fine. Again, there's a huge difference. District attorney or whatever says, hey, we don't have enough to, like, put him in jail for it. That's one thing. But enough circumstantial exists where, yeah, his employer is allowed to make a different decision. And I was stunned because the people who think Goodell and everyone continue to get this wrong, there's just going to be, I think, some sometimes justifiable outrage. Because just like with the Ray Rice thing, like, oh, we saw this going on. We think, what was it, two games? We think
two games
seems ample. Though, you know, there was,
played since.
Right. But there was massive outrage over
the decision that was
right. That seemed
the
like
punishment.
Exactly. That it wasn't quite enough given what the crime was. In this case, it's nothing for what. I mean, it's just kind of funny how, you know, that. And put it this way, what's his name? I mean, you're seeing guys lose their jobs, it seems like, for lesser things. Now he's not going to get a punishment. That surprises me, Ken. What did you think?
I'm with you. I mean, you can't. I have multiple thoughts on this. I don't think a human being has to be the right, has to have the right to earn. And I don't think it should cost you, theoretically, your pro career, because you need to be punished, but at the same time, you still need to be able to earn.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, unless you go to jail or something like that, he's got to have a job to work the rest of his life.
If
I mean,
you compare him with his ex-teammate, Kareem Hunt, what he did,
right.
I think Kareem's offense is a little less.
I agree. That's what's funny, too. Josh, he lost his job, had to restart again.
Not that either of them are less than anything.
Well, and here's what's funny, too. I think it sort of cheats the Chiefs, where it's like, okay, if you're going to get a second. So now this happens, so we have to, you know, cut him or whatever. They claimed they cut him because they'd asked him about what if something happened and he lied. That's one thing. Yeah. But you have this all, I mean, one of the top five running backs in football. Like, okay,
but
this happened, we have to kick him off. And given the circumstances of what actually happened there, I was like, yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't think this guy can, to your point, should lose his job for life. And it's funny when people get on their high horse and see that little video snip or whatever, like, that guy should never play another down
right.
in the NFL. Like, really?
You can't do
the,
that.
The guy next to you in the cubicle has been convicted of more crimes than Kareem Hunt. I'm serious.
Right.
I mean,
no,
anywhere
I
you go, people have this stuff, Ken. They have their private demons and all that. And for them to say that, and I'm with you, like, the whole idea.
To define what I said,
should he ever play again? Of course he needs a second chance.
To define what I was saying, though, I do think there should be punishment handed down. I do.
Yeah.
I absolutely do.
Oh, I agree. But do you think Kareem Hunt, I thought, already paid more than whatever, because the Chiefs caught him immediately. He already missed the whole second half of the season. I just thought that should have been, like, time served as far as an NFL suspension. He's going to get suspended on top of that.
Yeah. You know, it's crazy, John.
He already has, right? Eight?
Yeah.
You know,
Cleveland
Browns.
Go ahead. No, that's all.
Go back to what you're saying. Going back to the impact right now, the Chiefs have now moved to the odds-on favorite to win the Super Bowl.
Is that right?
At 6-1. The Patriots are 6-1.
I don't think they're winning that division.
6-50-1. You know, well,
the Chargers. If Melvin Gordon.
I'm surprised that somebody has to be, you know, the Super Bowl favorite, but I've been surprised at why from the start it was the Chiefs. I don't know.
An overreaction to the end of last year.
Oh, Meatloaf was just in the stands
much.
Right behind its side.
Pretty much.
Not to change subjects, but.
But you're right, the Patriots are always going to be there. I guess you got to put some other candidates with them, but I'm surprised the Chiefs are so high up there.
Absolutely. I'm looking for the odds right now. Keep going, guys, because I have the
odds.
Well,
like I said, I heard it was about 6-1 on Kansas City. Like I said, 6 or 7-1 on the Patriots.
The opening odds for the Chiefs to win the AFC West, JD, were minus 260. The current odds got down as low as 150. And now let me look and see who
just to win that division?
Yeah, AFC West right now, the Chiefs are minus 210.
What are the Chargers?
That's a huge shock.
Plus 185. So a lot of future bets going on, you know, right now. Here we are less than 60 days, you know, ready for football. I mean, I'm ready for football. Are you guys ready for football?
Oh, I'm ready.
I know the William Hill has the Pro Pick'em contest out.
Yeah, it'll be here quick. You know, it's one of those things, it seems like slower time of summer now, but we always talk about it. Kenny seems like all these years, you know, go by like a blur, but we would sit there after the spring football game and start talking about the Wolfpack schedule, and it just seems like all conjecture. Before you know it, the ball's kicking off. I mean, those 6 weeks will go by pretty fast.
I want to talk a little bit about this fight, but I don't want to jump into it now because there's a lot to have to say, because we were absolutely correct on the direction this fight went. Absolutely correct.
Totally.
If you would have listened.
Flipped on its head even more.
Wow. Crazy.
The odds.
So who's being overlooked in the NFL this year? It's just like, John, we're going to get to talk about the Giants a little bit later. You know, they were cast to the cellar and looking to trade everybody, but now, I mean, they go into Colorado, they sweep.
Took two out of three from Milwaukee.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, and they're on
they
fire.
They won last night, right?
Did you see the Kevin Durant thing?
Oh, they haven't lost since he left or something? What is it?
Before, right? They were 52. Well, let me look at the exact stat. It is hilarious. So there is a curse of Kevin Durant, Giants Warriors fans, if you didn't know that. So in 2016, the Giants were 52-32 when Kevin Durant signed with the Warriors. Since that time, they went 207 and 277, and they are now 13-2 since he signed with the Nets. So
yeah.
During the time that KD was a Warrior, Giants were awful.
I believe in that. And,
yeah.
No, I don't.
It's a fact.
It's a fact.
That's science,
it's
Kenny.
Backed up by math.
It is. That was clearly math. Those were clearly numbers right there.
Listen, Kevin Durant, as far as I'm concerned, he can get gone.
Oh, I know.
He's gone.
Me too.
Yeah,
I
got no. I'm not a big Kevin Durant fan at all. I just think that he's just chasing all that stuff. But I want to keep. We only got about a minute and a half before we have to go after our next commercial break. But I want to talk a little bit about what's coming up in the football season. I mean, here we are. We talked about Tyreek Hill and his effect on the Chiefs. But John, the Steelers are the Steelers going to win the AFC North? I know that you're a big Steeler fan.
You know that they are kind of getting overlooked with what the Browns are the sexy pick and everything. I think that they had some addition by subtraction. I really do. Sure, there might be your two best players, but they're also the two biggest headaches that organization has ever had. So I'm really, really looking forward to this year. I don't know if it's the Browns' time or not. So I think the Steelers are going to win 9-10 games in that stretch, 9-10-11.
Are you a Browns fan?
No, Ken.
Not at all?
No. What do you mean? That's
you could literally be
their arch rivals.
Well. Who knows? I don't know. I thought the Ravens were an arch rival.
They are. Everybody's a Steelers arch rival.
Get out of here. You listening to this, Josh?
Oh, in that division, it's a fact.
All right. The Browns and the Ravens aren't rivals.
They are. They are to the Browns, they are.
Browns-Bengals?
Oh, Browns-Bengals is huge.
Bengals-Ravens?
Bengals-Ravens is nasty.
Josh, you listening to all this nonsense?
These are facts,
well,
man.
Well, that division is pretty much, I mean,
those teams,
it seems like it does seem like every individual matchup is heated.
Look at your division. That's everybody hates each other in your division. That's the way it should be. You look at the AFC North with the, or East, whatever the hell, the Patriots have been running for 20 years. I don't see a lot of hate with those teams. It's just the Patriots are going to
something that probably kicked off the air.
I almost said it myself.
As a matter of fact, maybe we should go to break right now and regroup and come back and talk football. We still got the Open to talk about. We got the Pacquiao-Thurman fight, UFC this weekend. And we also got to get into the Giants. Pin it fever for the Giants, John.
Don't get ahead of yourself.
They announced there's still going to be sellers.
Big home dog tonight versus the Mets with Jacob DeGrom versus Beattie. So let's head off to our next commercial break. We'll come back. We'll continue to talk sports on ESPN 94.5 FM. All right. Welcome back to the William Hill Sports Show. John, who's texting? You don't even know, do you?
I don't know. Who's texting me?
Who's texting him with the Tyreek Hill stuff? John, for some reason, John, he lost his phone book in his phone, and it comes up as a random text. But somebody's texting John, kind of getting on him. But I'm not getting on him. Just relaying information.
Explaining the Tyreek Hill situation a little better.
Yeah.
Did
you read it?
Yeah.
What did it say?
I can read it again. It's Tyreek saying to his girlfriend or wife that, Crystal, you know I didn't cause any bruising or harm to our son. For some reason, I still may be charged. And she said, I know you didn't. I did. I hurt him. I'm the one that did it. I was hurt and mad at you, so I blamed you for everything.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, if that's the case, then there you go. That's why he didn't receive.
Or is it a cover-up?
I don't know. That's why.
Josh,
why,
is that?
That's well, why I'd say all of our possibilities, because the first audio recording sounded fairly authentic, too, when he made all the threats. So who knows? Again, I totally believe that by the letter of the law, yeah, there wasn't enough to convict him. Still stunned. John, you know, this is the same guy who got kicked out of Oklahoma State for beating same woman.
Yeah.
I mean, he got kicked out of college because for a domestic violence issue. Yeah. Remember, Tyreek Hill had that famous punt return against the Sooners to win the game, and he was going to be this hero, and he was never heard from again because of his off-the-field issues.
Mm-hmm. Against who?
Against this Oklahoma, sorry. But Bedlam. I know. I remember you were there. Cause yeah.
Go Pokes.
Yeah, overcame a three-touchdown deficit in the fourth quarter. And won
what,
it in
what game was that?
Bedlam.
Bedlam.
Yeah. Heck of a game.
Go Pokes.
That was classic.
Enough, guys. All right, college football. What do you guys want to go to next? Let's talk a little bit about boxing. You know, we talked about this fight a long time ago, the Manny Pacquiao versus Keith Thurman. And I'm looking at this, and they opened up, John, Keith Thurman -120 when his high is -130.
Uh-huh.
And we made a comment there that if you like Pacquiao, you better bet him now, because as we got closer to the fight, All the square money was going to come in on Pacquiao, and boy has it, guys. I mean, looking at this right now, it's moved a little bit since I've went on the air. Right now, Pacquiao's went from a minus. It has. So Pacquiao's went from a plus 110 to a minus 165.
That's crazy.
Thurman, right now, John. You're getting my money with Keith Thurman at plus 145 right now.
I think you have to.
Absolutely.
We talked about it last time that, you know, I sincerely thought Pacquiao was done about 5 years ago. So, I mean, it's Keith Thurman, that's the only way you could bet this. It's the only way I could bet this, at least.
Well, you certainly can't take Pacquiao now, laying this huge price when you could have got him at -110. You know, Keith Thurman, Pacquiao, you know, obviously, you know, more ring experience. He's 10 years older. He's 40 years old. Thurman's 30. Pacquiao, 61-7, 39 knockouts, 61-7, two draws with 39 knockouts. Keith Thurman, 29-0 with 22 knockouts, 10 years to the younger.
Right.
And
he hasn't stopped anybody in like 7 years, for what that's worth. I mean, he's got decisions in like seven straight fights. And this one's hard to call, though, Ken. Like you said, at one point, there was
no doubt.
I think
the price makes it easy to call.
I agree. But, no, I mean, in terms of the actual outcome, I mean, the betting, I think you have to take Thurman now. But the way it opened up, though, like, yeah, these are pretty even fighters. I agree. When you see that matchup, though, Manny Pacquiao was available at plus 115. It was clear that's where the value side resided. And now that's flipped the script, and it seems like the money just keeps getting piled on Pacquiao. You know, this never works out. Can you know what this sort of reminds me of, too? Especially when there's this much steam where it's almost transferred – you know, it's almost changed by a full dollar on the spread or on the money line. It's when you see those big spread changes from time to time, and all the steam is on one side, for instance, in college football. Occasionally you'll see a team open up at like minus 20 and a half, 21, and sometimes there's so much steam that it closes like 27 and a half, and you're like, this is just crazy. And the other team either wins or covers by a mile. That's what I see here. Like I said, the whole world is so clearly on Pac-Man that you pretty much have to take it the other way. And we'll see. Like I said, Thurman wasn't really impressive in his last bout. He came off a two-year layoff and barely got by, and he's been getting by in decisions. But even this, like, plus 140 is probably good enough, but these fight outcome props, I think Thurman by decision is the steal at 2-1.
I agree.
The other guy's getting knocked out.
Well, I went and looked at all the the predictions today, and everybody had decision. Everybody had, you know, it's pretty split. Half the people thinking that the fight's going to go one to Pac. Half of it think it's going to Thurman. I like the round total is 11.5. Overs -330, I think, is what it is. So, I mean, you can't bet that. I mean, so, but you're right, Josh. I like Thurman. I mean, I'm not looking to. I think it goes over. If you like Thurman, why take plus? Why take plus a quarter when you can take 2-1 on your money? And really, really, all you're doing is fading a minute and a half.
I agree. And the only thing is, with all these
watch Thurman be way ahead and get knocked out with 10 seconds
left. You got the draw too at 11-1. And I will say,
what's wrong with that?
Nothing. You know, that's, we've seen tons of draws lately. Look at it. You had the the heavyweight fight, Tyson Fury, that was a draw. You had Triple G and Canelo go to a draw. You've seen lots of, this could be a close fight, and the draw is worth a shot, I believe. But, you know, one thing I told you, Thurman's kind of a blowhard in that he really talks a lot, and he, to this point, hasn't really backed it up. He hasn't looked great lately. But I'll say this, Ken, I saw an interview he did yesterday where, at least on the technical aspect of the fight, I thought he made sense, where he is the bigger, he's taller, longer reach, you know, stronger guy. And he talked about how the advantage for him, how Pacquiao, in order to do anything, is going to have to basically jump inside because he has such a reach disadvantage. And Thurman saying, you know, he's going to do that, to get close to me, he's going to have to come inside, and when he does, it's when I punish him. From a pure technical aspect, I'm like, you know what, that makes sense. Pacquiao's got a great chin. I mean, he's only been knocked out a couple of times. And, you know, Marquez hit him like 7 years ago, but it's not as if I think either guy's in risk of, you know, being knocked out. The guy with the worst chin is clearly Thurman, but can Pacquiao really, you know, take it to him? I mean, from a technical standpoint, if Thurman does that and just kind of buys his time, like he's been a decisionator in his last, you know, 6-7 fights, I think he could, you know, he could control the boxing and win decision.
It's really interesting. I didn't expect this line. I expect maybe a reverse of this when we first started talking about it. I've been shocked ever since. So, I mean, maybe the price is dictating what's going to happen, but yeah. like we like to say on the show, but I just. There's so much value in Thurman. It's a huge
there
fight.
There is now. You know what's funny? When the fight was very first announced, I had that thought in my head. I'm like, God, how are they going to price this? And I knew it would be close. And when it came out, that's about what I thought. I was like, you know what? Thurman is a slight chalk. Makes sense. To reverse it, like I said, Kim, I always wondered if the Pacquiao is almost up to $170 now. I did not imagine that. I mean, I knew Pacquiao would get the money, but not that high.
We've been saying since this fight was first booked by Nick and he put the first lineup, we said, listen, if you like Pacquiao, you better bet it now, because we knew.
Totally.
But, and like you said, Josh, this is an amazing a square overreaction. You know,
right.
You brought up the prop sheet that Nick and these guys put out here at William Hill. I've never seen, usually Pacquiao by knockout in the first round, Thurman by knockout in the first round, etc. You go down this, Josh, I have never seen anything where the shortest odds are 30-1.
I agree. Usually there's an 8-1, whatever.
Yes. Have you ever seen a 30-1?
No, and I'm sure they're going to go down. Like I'm curious if, you know, how current some of these are, but you're right. They're so huge, and there's no gap in between them. Where usually, you know, the guy had some power, the late rounds would have lower odds. And this, to me, and I did a big article on Sportsline today about this exact dynamic. But it goes to show that the odds makers just don't really see a knockout at all. Like you said, 11.5, the over is like almost minus $4 for, and all these round props are like, sure, fifth round knockout, 50-1. Take your pick, 50-1 for either guy, basically any round. It goes to show you they're just daring you to take that, because it's pretty clear they expect no knockout.
You know, I look at this and I just say, is it worth, if you like the under, just bet $10 on every round. That's, you're in for 200.
Would you come out ahead?
Yeah.
Would you come out ahead?
It's 24 bets.
Okay.
It's 24 bets. Your shortest take would be $300. So.
Yeah.
So you win $60. I mean, I'm just saying. I mean, I'm looking at this.
Okay.
I know you're trying to figure out the math.
Yeah, I am. But I just wonder if that actually pays better than putting $10 on the under.
What happens if Pacquiao pulls a hamstring in the fifth round? I don't know what happened. Thurman in the fifth. $10 gets you back $400. I mean, what if there's a headbut? What if they stop by bleeding? I mean, there's
exactly.
so many
There's always variables.
Variables.
I agree. Like I said, I don't
that,
say
that's not no action.
Actual knockout, but no, doesn't no, mean it if, goes if it, the distance.
Well, it's action after a certain point, yes.
Okay.
But it just says, if you look, John, it doesn't say by knockout. It just, knockout or knockout, Pacquiao, Thurman, knockout, round, decision, draw.
Yeah,
right.
So it's if the fight ends in the fifth round, if you win.
But I mean, if there was a headbutt, like
if it goes
to like
the scorecards. If it goes to the scorecards, so there's criteria that happen. After X amount, it goes to the scorecards.
Right. And like you said, it doesn't matter.
Which is
the over-under, why it gets stopped, just that it did. But and by the way, if you like Pacquiao and don't want to lay the $160, if you want to improve your payback in him, then there you go. Pacquiao by decision is 3-2, so plus $150. If you want to cut
the scalp it a little bit.
Right. But, of course, again, that's your only method. So if he does somehow knock him out, then you'd be out of luck. But that's the way to reverse your odds and get a little bit of a price on Manny.
Yeah, this is the MGM Graham tomorrow, guys, or tomorrow night, everybody. You know, Pacquiao's like we've been talking about. It opened up as a plus 120. Probably, I actually saw him probably as high as a plus 130. No, I never saw 130. I saw 125, I think, one time. But then now you have Pacquiao. It switched all the way around. Like I said, let me fire up my William Hill sports app again.
Nice.
It's up to my – you love it, don't you? Minus 160.
It never gets old.
Yeah, minus 165, you know. Huh?
Showing the fight, is that going to?
Oh no! We were gonna show the fight here, but we got to the game a little bit late.
Oh, gotcha.
The total the rounds under is plus 270. So plus 270. So there's your scalp. You know, it's not as high as I thought it was, but it's actually moved a little bit. So I don't know. I mean, I'm excited. I like to watch Pacquiao fight, you know, but there comes a time when all these champions, they go out on their back.
Totally.
I mean, everybody goes out on their back.
Mania was down a few years ago. But, you know, I looked into this today, Ken, because I was curious. You know, he looked terrible against Floyd, and a lot of people have. But it goes to show you, and that was 4 years ago. So he's 40 now, and he's 30. There's a big difference, of course, between mid-30s and 40 with where you are athletically and physically. But I wonder if that was sort of the end of the line with him, but it's clear he was kind of injured. And ever since he's recovered from that, his performances have increased pretty much with each bout. And it's interesting because we can pretty much agree he got robbed against the Australian guy, Jeff Horn, right? But aside from that, like I said, pretty good opponents here and
he's
there.
Oh, he 40.
Fought Timothy Bradley after, I mean, he dominated a third match with Timothy Bradley, and they were 1-1, and he just smashed him at a time when Bradley was smashing everyone else. And the only thing I would say in that time, though, since Mayweather, the only kind of subpar opponent he had was his last one, who was Adrian Broner, and that's just because Broner doesn't care anymore. But nonetheless, Broner is still a four-time division champion. So Pacquiao actually has had this real rebirth. And again, count me among those who I want to be sold on Keith Thurman, but for like 7-8 years he's been saying the same thing, and we've never really seen him step up. So,
but has he lost?
No, he hasn't lost, and that's what I'm saying. Maybe it's his time to either he's proven as a fraud, or even if he wins, he probably should beat a 40-year-old Pacquiao.
-165 plus 145.
Fight Errol Spence or Terrence Crawford. Next, I want to see Thurman fight someone real. Yeah.
I watched Shakur Stevenson the other night, and boy, was he impressive. I know he's fighting a tomato can, basically, but he looks like the future to me. He's got all the tools. I like that.
So, John, how do you think this fight's going to – I've got to take the plus money here. I mean, I hate rooting against Pacquiao because I love Pacquiao. I mean, I think he's
– I'm a fan of his Pacquiao. As well, but I just – I don't know. I'd like to see some fresh blood going, you know, and plus money with the reputation that Thurman has at this point.
And it's not often, John, that Nick and these guys are that far off with their opening line.
That's what's scary about it, so we'll see.
I know. So this fight, I don't know what time, but it's in Las Vegas tomorrow.
Nine o'clock, I think. Okay. And for what it's worth, Ken, like we talked about boxing, and I've been disillusioned with some stuff that's gone down. And this is a curiosity, though. This may be the first fight I pay for since Triple G Canelo won.
All right.
I'm actually thinking of buying it.
All right. There you have it. We have to go after our traffic report. Be back after these messages on ESPN 94.5 FM. All right, we're back. Spent the last segment talking about the big fight on hand tomorrow at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas, Manny Pacquiao versus Keith Thurman. You know, right now, like we said on the break, Keith Thurman went from a minus 25-cent, 30-cent favorite to a plus 45-cent dog. Pacquiao weighing in right now at minus 165 with the total rounds 11.5 over, minus 330 under, plus 270. That fight's tomorrow. Also on slate tomorrow, Josh, UFC. We have a UFC card, and I was just going over it. My man, my ex-Dallas Cowboy, Greg Hardy's on the card. He's actually a dog. I haven't seen him. You know, I've been waiting.
Oh, yeah, that's
guy.
A great dude you want to claim.
Yeah.
Hey, my man.
Well, he's a cowboy guy.
Girl onto a bunch of guns.
Listen, you're gonna.
Speaking of domestic violence,
hold on.
Is it, guys who
did that happen, Jarman? Or did that not happen?
Guys who didn't survive.
You're gonna upset.
Yeah, Jarman.
The anonymous Twitter.
Can I say that?
The anonymous Twitter. Twitterer.
Yeah, we're getting anonymously trolled, but we figured it out.
All right, good deal. With that being said, Greg Hardy versus Juan Adams, minus 105. Total rounds, 1.5. I'm betting against Hardy. I just don't. I'm just ready to turn the page on him, Josh.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny, he's been a real polarizing guy since he joined UFC for a lot of reasons. Now, people know of his background and stuff. Okay, we talked about, should a guy get a second chance? Hey, he probably, you know, still had some football left in him when he basically got exiled out of there. He starts, it's obviously not a real easy thing to get into mixed martial arts for a living. You got to, you know, really be willing to take a beating and learn that craft. So he's come up through the ranks. Most people don't deny him that. Ken, the issue for most UFC fighters with Hardy is, right away, one, he has this arrogance. He's saying, talking about how he's going to be the greatest. But they don't like, sort of like Conor McGregor, how he was given all this publicity before his time. So Hardy can already, he's fought a few times. Every time he's been in there, he's been like co-main event two times. And this is literally like his debut. So there's guys been in the UFC fighting their your butts off for 10 years or whatever, saying, hey, why does he get to be co-main event right away before he's even earned anything? With Dana White, of course, is playing off it. This guy could be a heel, whatever it is. He knows the name's going to bring attention. For what it's worth, you know, I'm not a big, just a fan of, again, his second chance is fine. I'm not a big fan of his attitude. I don't think he's a great fighter, but Ken, believe me, that's why I said I'm big on Juan Adams, who is actually a prospect. I've seen him fight several times. He lost his last one to a world-class wrestler. Yeah, it's a close decision. I thought could have gone either way. But Adams is 5-1. He's been calling out Hardy since day one. So in all the MMA shows and everything, and he's on Twitter, and he's like, you know what? I'm going to be the one who puts this guy in his place, ends the hype train. And I got to tell you, I believe him. I think he's more skilled, and that's why he's the slight chalk here. Juan Adams is the pick.
You know, and it's a short price at -115.
Yeah, and it's interesting that they put him there, because I actually saw some books kind of have it the other way around. They had Hardy, and who knows, just name recognition, maybe the line flips.
Oh, here we go.
Maybe it flips by tomorrow, but I saw some books that actually had Hardy as a slight chalk.
I wonder when Jesse James is going to weigh in. He said these guys have real heat with each other. Someone is getting...
Yeah. I did not just say that, did I?
He says somebody's getting... He in a very, very radio-friendly phrase that somebody's going to get just knocked out. But that's it's not the way he put it.
Wonder if he believes, like I said, I think it's going to be Adams who's doing the knocking out. He's the better fighter, I believe.
Weighing in on the UFC. Let's hear what else he has to say. You know, obviously UFC is not – I'm a follower in UFC. I don't really have a strong opinion, but I do follow some sharp guys. I'll have a little bit more idea of where I'm going tomorrow with my wagering. But Joss and Jesse, is there anything on this card? I mean, there's a whole lot of fights right now that you like, Josh.
Yeah, some real good ones. And by the way, this is pretty sweet. It's a free card on ESPN, so you don't have to do the thing with the digital. It's not on the Plus subscription, nor is it pay-per-view, so it's just regular ESPN. They're smart to make it accessible, but this is a great card. But, yeah, I told you, Juan Adams is my favorite pick. There's some others. Walt Harris is pretty good. I think Olenek's a live dog, though. Walt Harris has been coming up the ranks. That's the heavyweight co-main event. Olenek's for sure live. I mean, Harris has been improving, but he's still a bit of a raw prospect, and Linux got some skills. I like that. And even the main event, the underdog. I mean, I like Leon Edwards is a slight chalk as well, but that's a dead even. Rafael Dos Anjos has been coming on lately. I mean, he beat Kevin Lee in his last fight. All his losses are to top-tier guys, and I don't think he's done just yet. I think there's some value there. But right there, Ken, I mean, a real mild, basically, pick'em style favorite on Adams and a little – dog there in Olenek. Those are the ones I like the most. And you mentioned Andre Arlovsky. Actually, like in the fight, I like his opponent, but that's too steep because I like Ben Rothwell, but he's just coming off. He was suspended for a while for steroids, this and that. I think this is his second fight back. Arlovsky's still dangerous.
He actually, Jesse James agrees with you on Juan Adams. Did you say that you like Leon Edwards too?
No, I said I actually would take Dos Anjos as a slight underdog, although I understand why Edwards is favored, but Dos Anjos is a...
He's leaning on the other side on that, you guys are going to have that.
That's a tight one, though. I mean, yeah.
So, well, UFC tomorrow, like you said, Josh, Nick has how many fights? 1, 2, 13. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. He's got 12 12 right now on the that you can wager on, and you can parlay, but you can't parlay the undercard. He said Olenek is a very live dog. So with that being said, it's UFC, especially nothing like putting a dog parlay together in the UFC. I might be looking to do that tomorrow, Josh.
Yeah. And before we leave here, I'm curious. I'll show you what it pays. We're going to go up there. Yeah, I could do it on the app too, but I think I'm just going to do this one with a physical ticket because I'm curious. But I mean, Juan Adams parlay to Alexei Olenek parlay to Keith Thurman for like 50, and we'll see what that pays. And it's going to be pretty decent, I bet.
Why this? No, we're on right now. I don't know why this guy's saying that we're not on. We're on right now. So, anyways, with that being said, what else is going on in the world of sports, Josh? We got UFC. We talked about boxing. We talked a little bit about this. We got Sweet P. Whitaker. Man, him passing, that really is terrible.
Yeah, apparently, he was 55 and he was crossing the street wherever the other day and got hit by a car. I resisted, the urge to make a distasteful joke about, his passing because... probably not appropriate, but you heard about right Pernell Whitaker.
Boy, what did I miss?
Oh, another. Ken just brought it up that Pernell Whitaker was hit in traffic the other day. I told him I resisted the urge to make a joke about it. I guess the bobbing and weaving left him with age or whatever. But yeah,
I made a horrible joke about Oscar De La Hoya never hit him, but I was a huge fan of Sweet P. Whitaker. Huge fan. Awful.
Awful. Awful stuff.
And that was back in boxing's
that's
my glory day that we missed.
It's my dream match, as boring as it would be, and we know it'd go the distance, but Sweet Pea versus Floyd Mayweather.
Yep. It's all right. So, golf, let's talk a little bit about the Open. What do you guys think,
of Tiger? Holy cow, man.
I know, Tiger playing back to exactly what I thought he would be. I want to make this bet again.
I'll take it.
Tiger missed the cut, right?
He withdrew.
Yeah.
I think he withdrew.
How about Rory shoot a 65 today and still not making the cut?
Don't shoot seven on your first hole of, first
right.
hole of the tournament.
Right.
Or don't. What do you take, a double or
now,
a triple?
Now, you know he holds the course record at age 16.
Yeah, I did read that.
He shot a 61 at age 16.
Well, that makes it even worse, Sean.
So you're thinking, boy, Rory's just going to. And today he did. Today he looked like who I thought he was going to be. I bet Tommy Fleetwood. That's the only bet I made was Tommy Fleetwood. And he's one back.
Tommy Fleetwood right now is minus seven. He's chasing Shane Lowry and J.B. Holmes.
And J.B. Holmes.
You know, but you look, Fleetwood right now, he's the odds on, going back to what you said, John.
Yeah.
He's 5-1 to win it right now.
Yeah, I got him at 17, I think.
Wow.
18.
Nice. That's
so,
good. That's good.
Yeah,
right
it was there. it was nice. That guy's just always in contention. He's
always
something. But
I also
had a bet on Rory, though. I thought that's the guy.
I never fade the favorites in these.
I usually don't either, but the fact that at age 16 he dropped to 61.
Yeah. Too much pressure.
I guess.
I mean, I guess eventually Rory's a good enough golfer.
So once the pressure was off and it looked like he had no chance to make the cut, he really caught fire today.
I mean, I want to bet Spieth. I really want to bet Spieth.
Yeah, by the way, they spotted Spieth a 40-1 heading into this thing. It's like, man, they really lost confidence in that guy.
Well, he's 15-1 right now. Jordan Spieth, he's tied for eighth at three back. But I look at the people in front of him. He's got to overcome Brooks Koepka, Justin Rose, Westwood, Fleetwood, Lowry, J.B. Holmes.
That's a lot.
I mean, I'm looking at and I'm just going, man.
Koepka's only going to get better.
But you're saying you would or wouldn't consider a flyer on Spieth?
No. I just think there's too many good golfers. He just
every one of those guys that you just named. Not that everyone on the PGA Tour is not solid, but every one of those guys is so steady. There's not a lot of variation.
Can you count on that at the British though?
I don't, especially with the weather the way it is.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying, but with those particular guys that you just mentioned, I think so. It's going to be you're going to have to put up a real number.
Two days in a row.
For the love of God, Rory shot a 65 today, didn't make the cut.
Yeah, 65. You know, I'm looking at these scores today, you know, 67, 68. The leader, J.B. Holmes, shot 66, 68. Shane Lowry, 67, 67. So the
Shane
three
Lowry.
Leaders. Huh?
Shane Lowry. It was just a
Shane Lowry.
Mark Lowry joke.
You know, and I'm just looking at this. But, you know, Jordan Spieth, I wouldn't be looking. What about Brooks Koepka at 5-1? I mean,
listen, Brooks Koepka is the best.
He is a.
He's the closer right now. Why not?
How about what he said about practicing? Did you hear all that?
Huh? Oh, I loved it.
When you see, he blew off Tiger for
how often do you practice? Whatever he said. He said, "When you see me on TV,
that's when I play.
That's when I play. Yeah, that's when I'm golfing."
Well, they.
It's unbelievable. You know, I don't. Totally believe it, but it's such a troll job on all of us that
it's pretty. I kind of like it, and it may be close. Totally,
yeah. I bet
it's
it
funny.
Is
it's clearly an exaggeration, but nonetheless, it's sort of funny how you're right. He's trying to sell us on that,
yeah.
And it may be closer than people realize. But I love the Tiger Woods thing, where Tiger's like, "Yeah, I texted him like, hey, let's go play some rounds and tune up our games." Like, he never heard back.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
The guy doesn't exactly want to help Tiger get healthier.
I also remember the Koepka interview guys the reporter asked him. He goes, "It always seems like you step up your game for the majors, and that's only the only thing you really take serious." And he goes,
"Yeah,
it is."
Exactly.
He goes, "I mean, they were expecting some long out, drawn out." And he goes, "No, that's not."
So a guy at my office today, we were talking about. He goes, "Well, how much better would he be if he took it as seriously?" First of all, he does take it seriously.
Golf is a mental grind.
But how do you know that would make him better? This is his process. Are you questioning Brooks Koepka's approach?
Right. Really? Put it this way. If you're going to specialize in something when it comes to a sport like golf, well, might as well be the most important ones. So if you're going to play at your absolute peak four times a year, then that makes sense.
Sure.
To be those four.
Well, I agree.
And he keeps winning them.
Well, and golf is such a mental grind. I mean, he probably has to relax his mind.
And you can take off the John Deere, you know, whatever. I mean, right? Yeah. I mean, you don't have to play everything.
He's a beast.
Yeah.
So of all these guys, are we all kind of in agreement here that we don't think that J.B. Holmes is going to go wire to wire?
Thank you for saying in agreement, by the way, not agreeance, first of all. But, no, I think Tommy Fleetwood's going to win.
So you like him at 5-1 with one stroke. You like agreement? You like agreement?
Well, yeah, it's agreement, not agreeance.
Who says that? Do I?
No, but it's been said.
Oh.
There's someone that used to be on the show that used to say that.
Oh,
it drove me crazy.
Agreement.
In agreement.
Yeah.
And then we look at the dictionary, and they allow that as well, but that's neither here nor there. But I think Tommy Fleetwood, just because I made the bet, is going to win.
All right.
What was his odds?
I think it's either 17 or 18-1.
You know, I'm just looking. You know, you have all these golfers right now, 25-1 for the field, but you got to beat all those guys.
Man. Who's left in the field?
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I would have to go. Nick's got a lot of bets right here. But with that being said, looking for a flyer and some value, I think I'd rather have, golly, you know, can J.B. Holmes hold this off? I mean, you can get
him.
He
can, man. Huh? He's good.
10-1. He's 10-1. You got the leader. You got the co-leader. You got the co-leader at 10-1 and 7-1 for Shane. I guess the value with me would be the leader to hold on.
Yeah.
That's the value.
What's Lowry at?
Lowry at 7-1.
Seven. Yeah. The leader at 10-1.
Why not?
What's Koepka?
It's 5-1. Yeah, Koepka's 5-1 with a 3-shot deficit.
And you say Fleetwood's like 10 or so, 12?
Fleetwood's 5.
Fleetwood's 5.
Fleetwood and Brooks are 5-1 at leaders, and one of them's 1 shot behind, and one of them's 3 shots behind.
I like that. That was my country stage name was Terry Kevin Fleetwood. So I've always liked the name Fleetwood, and I'm sticking with him.
All right. With that being said, good name. Can't wait. Can't wait till Sunday to see the final round. Nothing better than the final day. Three or four guys. Matchups will be out tomorrow. I'll be looking at the matchups and trying to get in action there. So let's head off for our last commercial break. William Hill Sports Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. All right, we're back. I'm looking at they were talking about the Sports Reno. You can find the podcast, and somebody was asking me about it, so I was reading his Facebook post.
If you click listen live, it's the national feed, so.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
So don't do that. You can actually find the show on Sports Reno and Josh Nagle. You can find his stuff. You can find his stuff too at sportsline.com, Josh.
There's a click process. I was just going to show you the price, but then I actually made the bet, but that's fine. Look at my three teamer for boxing and mixed martial arts tomorrow. I like it. That's going to win.
You bet.
Boy. For sure.
Juan
wow.
Listen.
Well, John, it needs to know. I just put some money on it. I was just going to show Ken what it was would pay out, but now I just fired a 60-buck three teamer on
Juan Adams minus 105. Olenek plus 130, Keith Thurman plus 145, $60 turns it into a sweet $660 bet. I'll be making that bet as soon as I get up. I'm going to walk over to the window.
There, the devil's at play.
Yeah, so
exactly.
That being said, John,
win.
Baseball. We got to talk a little bit about baseball. We thought the Giants were.
While we can.
I mean, the Giants here, they're one game below 500, 48 and 49.
Unbelievable.
We thought they were sellers the whole time.
They still are.
They go in.
We'll see.
It puts them
in a conundrum. Because they have two very, very valuable assets in obviously Madison Bumgarner, but Will Smith as well. And really Sam Dyson and there's other bullpen arms that you can look to as well. But Bumgarner in his last five starts has a 1.68 ERA, I believe it is. He's kind of turned it up a notch. And if you listen to him talk last night and you watch him out there, you watch Will Smith out there, obviously, you're going to play as hard as you can for the team that you're on at the time. They don't look like they want to go anywhere. They look like, you know what? Like Bumgarner said last night, we are in this thing. We're coming, is what he said. He said, I don't give an S when someone asked him about the trade rumors. But I still think it's in the Giants' best interest to trade him, to trade Will Smith. This has been a fun ride as a Giants fan. It really has been.
Bochy's farewell year.
Exactly, and there's some magic in there. But there's nothing to say that if you got rid of those two guys, as important as they are, that they can't keep this going. They might improve even if you get the right combination of players
back. That's possible, and you're right. I think the eye of the bigger prize is completely the thing here because, as we all know, baseball, too, is so cyclical. As nice as turnarounds they've had lately, let's face it, it's also short-term. I mean, they're not doing anything. I mean,
I don't believe so either.
They keep this team intact. They're not making the playoffs. We said we were going to pull the trigger. And John, what do you think? I don't know where I saw this, but I think it was yesterday. The media outlet escapes me. But I read an article. It was pretty thorough. And it said basically the Giants brass was saying, you know what, yeah, despite all this, and this is great and everything, we're still going to be sellers. We're not going to keep everybody, like you mentioned. And I still think it's the right thing. It's poor timing to go on a hot streak, and I get all that. But it's still for, you said, the long-term health of the organization needs to be done.
Yeah, I think Tim Flannery's right. He was on the Giants pregame last night saying you could do one or two things. For Madison Bumgarner, for what he's done for this organization, you got to trade the guy. Just so he doesn't become a free agent and have the qualifying offer attached to him that has hurt so many people like Kai Cole and the
reliever.
Yes.
Kimbrel.
Jeez, how can I remember? You know, that's happened. Not that that would happen to Bumgarner per se, but the second part is, or just re-sign him. he's a San Francisco Giant. He is the San Francisco Giants. If they could work it out, like Estes said last night, if you could work it out to make that trade and re-sign him in the offseason, that's the best-case scenario for everybody. But that doesn't happen. You know, the Red Sox said they were going to do that with Lester. Didn't happen. So, as a Giants fan, it's fun to watch what they're doing. They're playing great ball. Alex Dickerson is Barry Bonds, apparently. And Josh just nailed it, though. This is a short ride. This team, as much magic as Giants fans have seen in this decade, this is not the same type of team. This is not the same type of pitching staff. The bullpen's very good. The defense, especially on the outfield, is phenomenal. But it's just not a team that's built for the long haul. And I think you still need to retool as much. You know, they're one game under 500, two games back in the wild card.
Two and a half
back in the wild card.
But the thing that I looked there, though, John, you know, back when there were 4 and 5 games, they were chasing so many teams. Now they're only chasing 3 teams.
Yeah, they've leaped
Cardinals,
a lot
Phillies,
of,
and,
a lot of
and D-backs. Yeah. I mean, you know, and obviously that's with the Nationals and the Brewers holding down the two wild card,
yes,
spots. So you see this every year, though, guys. We see teams that look like they're dead, and then from nowhere after the All-Star break, you see these magnificent runs. And you know, you guys, John, you especially probably know the Giants better than most.
Yeah.
But with that being said,
yeah,
I don't
really
know.
Hitting the ball.
You talk about loyalty to Bumgarner, but you got to have loyalty to Bochy there too. And maybe you just say, listen, these guys are the Cowboys. We're riding out with them.
You do, but I still think that Flannery has a good point. That it's not fair to Bumgarner to kind of hold him hostage like that. Unless they are absolutely planning on signing him in the offseason, which I don't know why they wouldn't.
Well, isn't that
they have the money. It's not like the Giants are a small market poor team. They're not.
Isn't that kind of what the Giants, their MO is, though? Don't they reward those guys?
It is.
Look at Big Bad Timmy Jack. Look at Matt Cain.
And that kind of is the reason they're in this position.
You're right.
Now.
Sometimes to a fault. Yeah. Sometimes they've hung out too long.
Brandon Crawford, you know. Yeah. Buster Posey, these are my two favorite players of all time. Not too bad mouth. Literally the two faces of the franchise. But I think that you need to trade both of these guys, hopefully in a package together, and then just get a huge reward back for it. I don't know. They're in an interesting predicament now, and it's just Giants baseball is fun to watch again. That's all I really care about. They have their championships this decade, 3 of them, Dodger fans, and it's just been fun to not be a humiliating laughingstock that they've been for the last 2.5 years.
You know,
curse of Kevin Durant.
They finally, I agree, it's nice to see him restore some respectability. He was getting kind of bad there. But another part of the story that I like, too, is Pablo Sandoval being back with him.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, back in the day, I was of the belief where, man, of all the people, like I said, they just threw money, heaps of money at when the Giants were winning and seeming like they wanted to keep everybody. I always thought that guy got a raw deal. When he made it clear he wanted to stay and they didn't pay him, let him go on his way.
They offered him a really similar contract.
It was pretty upset when he, you know, ended up leaving and stuff. I like to just see it come full circle. Right? It was clear he loved San Francisco because he came back, and Bochy's still, you know, the same guy, still playing. Right? It was just clear how much
we love him.
Well, you know what I mean, though? Like, yeah, it's clear how he never wanted to leave. That even despite some of his ill will, you know, his hurt feelings, that he came back because it's just where he wants to be. I just like that part of the story.
I mean, it's.
I thought they should have paid him back in the
day. They did, though. They offered him $95 million over 5 years. He ended up signing for like $98 million. It wasn't like a
huge... I thought at the time it was way below what comparable guys were getting.
No, they stepped up and did it.
I thought they just said no thanks, but I don't know.
He kind of burned every bridge on the way out of town besides Bochy and Hunter Pence is what he said. He goes, I won't miss anybody in that clubhouse besides Boch and Hunter. And it's like, wow. So
he didn't get along with Buster?
No.
Obviously not, right?
Obviously not. If he singled out Hunter and Boch, but it's I don't know. I think you still have to trade. I think you still have to look towards the future, and even if it means because one of the teams really scouting Will Smith is the Los Angeles Dodgers. As awkward as that would be, that's where Farhan.
Well, that's their Achilles heel right now.
That's where Farhan Zaidi came from. He also made the point. Farhan made the point of not only it's weird trading within your division, especially to that team, but you're also weakening that team for years to come with the right move.
That's true.
So, but do we want to see Will Smith on the mound for the last out of the World Series of the Dodger Championship? No. Absolutely not. You don't want to be the cause of that. So
that's true. What about the American League, guys? You got Cleveland and Oakland holding down the wild card spots right now.
I can't believe the A's.
Tampa Bay's right there. Boston's two back. Rangers are 4.5 back. The Angels are 5.5 back. I don't think anybody Twins? Below the Angels can go. The Twins are leading the division, aren't they?
Yeah.
Wild card. No,
Twins have been falling off lately.
Twins are still leading the division.
Mets just swept them.
But with that being said, who do you think is going to win it's going to be Boston,
Houston,
isn't it?
Houston Astros.
No. Wild card.
Wild card?
Yeah.
The Indians.
Well, you get two.
I think the Indians
might catch
Minnesota.
Well, I thought you said who's going to win the wild card.
Yeah, who's going to win the wild card? Right now, it's Cleveland and
the A's.
Wild card
game. Oh. Well, the Indians. I don't think the Red Sox are going to make the postseason.
Who's going to be the second wild card team?
The A's.
So you think it's going to stand?
Tampa Bay.
Tampa Bay's, they're basically tied.
Right. I think they'll get
one percentage
card.
Point
they're,
below.
It seems like they're coming. They started off real strong, had their regression, but now it looks like they're coming on strong again. I like the way – I just think Tampa Bay's pitching.
We have 2 weeks till the trade deadline, a week and a half.
End of the month, right.
It's going to be really, really interesting to see what happens. Tuesday could be Bumgarner's last start ever in San Francisco as a San Francisco Giant.
Isn't that crazy?
It's crazy. But we've been thinking that for a month, though.
Don't you – I mean, he – does he want to hit? Or would he?
That's we were talking about this today. Does he want to shave his beard and not hit and go to the Yankees? That doesn't seem like the type of move Madison Bumgarner would want to make.
Yeah,
but I don't know. If he were to go anywhere, I'd want him to go to Houston.
I can see that.
Atlanta makes a lot of sense too. So does Milwaukee.
Ooh, I would love him in Atlanta. Me being a Brave fan,
and he being a Brave fan as well, growing up in North Carolina. But it'd be a really, really bitter pill to swallow, even though. For the good of the franchise, I think trading Madison Bumgarner is the right move. Seeing him in another uniform is not something I'm prepared to see.
All right, unless it's a team you don't despise, you wouldn't. You would be okay with him having success for the Braves.
No, I despise the Braves.
Okay,
Houston Astros.
Astros.
Brewers.
Brewers. I hate the Brewers.
I don't see. I kind of like them, but right. Yeah, no. For the Braves, ugh.
All right.
That's no offense to you.
All right. Like us on Facebook at Kenny B, ESPN Sports Handicapping. That's Kenny B, ESPN Sports Handicapping. You can also follow me on Twitter at Ken Barler. Pretty simple, my name. Josh Nagel, you can follow get all his stuff at Sportsline. He is a writer for Sportsline. And, Josh, why don't you give him all that stuff real quick?
Sure. No, that's good. Like I said, Sportsline.com for whatever you want to see of mine up there. And Josh Nagel, one on Twitter.
All right, John Locke Stevens.
We're going to have a show Twitter coming, by the
and
way.
You see John Stevens tonight at the Aces game in the skybox.
We're
going to
do a Twitter, Josh.
Just thinking, why are we so far behind the curve on that?
Listen, right. It takes us a minute.
Right.
Right. Make sure you do all your wagering with Wim Hill. You can download the Wim Hill mobile sports app at www.wimhill.us. Pro Pick'em, ready for sign-up. Same time next week. Go Thurman.
Thanks for joining us for the William Hill Sports Show. Be sure to tune in again next Friday at 5 p.m. for all the action. This is KUUB Sun Valley, ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.